Opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its participants and are not necessarily those of WWPR Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
As a result of that, for example. CBO explicitly says that you're not going to see an increase in the unemployment rate, that when you see changes, it'll be that person who maybe didn't want to work those hours. They still have the option to. They still can, but in that case, maybe they'll decide they don't need to anymore, and that
the lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the lights.
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 AM to 10 AM. I'm Henry Edge. Here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Good morning, Henry.
We have a problem.
What's that?
We're not getting audio out of your mic. Talk into it some more.
Good morning, Tampa Bay.
No, you used the green light.
Good morning, Tampa Bay.
There you go.
Okay, sorry about that, Tampa Bay. My voice doesn't carry 5 feet further. I'd be on sooner. In any event, there's a lot of hullabaloo going on about the 1 or 2 million people that are going to be unemployed because of Obamacare. But in fact, as long as we've known the change in health care was going to happen, that was going to happen because the insurance companies have hired as many as 3 million people for the sole purpose of denying your care. Now, that's...
Well, no way, no. You're not telling the audience the right thing here.
Yes,
tell them the story first.
Well, all right, I'll tell them the story.
Well, it's right in the rundown.
You tell them the story.
Yeah, you're the analysis.
I'll wait for the analysis, okay.
The health care law will prompt over 2 million people to quit jobs or cut hours, the Congressional Budget Office agrees. It's not about the insurances keeping people off jobs. It's not about employers taking off jobs. It's all about people choosing, having a choice to not have to work as much to have health care. So in other words, when you're at the 7-Eleven and the line is 20 people long because the geriatric cashier who's working there to supplement their Medicare will be able to get affordable Medicaid coverage or something else like that, you won't have to wait in line. Or maybe it's the 55-year-old that's got the diabetes that can't move around the counter.
They're frozen in a job because they can't do anything else and can't move from employer to employer, which I agree with. Excuse me. But the point that I was making that's not being mentioned here is that historically, up until this change, there have been estimated 3 million people in the insurance industry that when you called in for your claim would tell you, well, we're not so sure we're going to cover that, Mr. So-and-so, you so-and-so. In any event, that has been going on. Those people are going to have to get other employment because the insurance industry is going to cut those jobs. So this other issue of being able to move and have mobility from job to job, which is a good thing, will cause a change in efficiencies and the employment situation overall.
How do you come up with 3 million people employed in the insurance with that particular task?
Well, that's a long-held understanding that the industry has hired for the sole purpose of denying care. In any event, so that is what I'm saying is a factor in this number that's not being mentioned.
Okay. Are you ready?
So, in any event, we've got a situation where the new law will free people, according to the New York Times, and young and old, to pursue their careers or retirement without having to worry about health coverage. Workers can seek positions they are most qualified for and no longer need to feel locked into a job they don't like because they need insurance for themselves or their families. This is the New York Times. The report clearly stated that health reform would not produce an increase in unemployment. Well, that's a debatable point. Workers unable to find jobs or underemployment, part-time workers who would prefer to work more hours per week. It also found no compelling evidence that, in as of now, part-time unemployment has increased as a result of the reform law. A frequent claim of critics of this law state that. Whether that will a hold or up with after a mandate that requires employers to provide coverage, which was delayed until 15 kicks in, is uncertain. Well, that goes to your point, Henry, about the geriatric person holding up the line in the 7-Eleven.
Well, we'll have to dissect that and parse the language of the Obamacare and the CBO estimate in just a moment. Our guest has joined us on the line. He is Daniel Estelin. He's an award-winning investigative journalist. He's a best-selling author of The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, published in 64 countries and translated into 41 languages. He was has given two speeches at the European Parliament on the Bilderberg Group and the International Monetary Crisis. You know, in our country, people go, Bilder who?
Oh, the Bilderberg Group, that's the paranoid business of the far right here. That
well, why don't you just insult the guests while we're bringing them on here?
No, okay, sure.
Well, I think someone must take it seriously if he's addressing the European Parliament on the issue.
Well, they take it in a different way, for sure.
In a front-page article, the Wall Street Journal called Estelin one of the few people who understands the current crisis. In August 2010, he was invited by Fidel Castro for a personal meeting in Havana, after Castro had read the Bilderberg story. Estelin became the first journalist to give a speech at the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the Venezuelan Armed Forces on global financial structures in the Bilderberg Group. He's the author of 12 books, five of them international bestsellers. He's sold over 6 million copies worldwide. And his new book is Trans Evolution, The Age of Human Deconstruction. And it's the changing paradigm of humanity that shall define the future and threaten its very existence. And you can read more and find out more at danielestelin.com. We'll link to that on our podcast page. And the very patient Daniel Estelin has been waiting for us here on the line, and I believe he's speaking to us from Spain. Daniel Estelin, thank you for joining us on The Morning Edge today. Are you in Spain today?
I am in Spain today. I'm not sure where I'm going to be tomorrow, but today I'm in Spain, yes. Thanks for having me on your show.
Daniel, where are you in Spain?
In Madrid.
Oh, you're in Madrid. So you're in the large, more modern city of Spain that is a center of most commerce.
Well, Spain actually doesn't exist as a country anymore. It's become a full-fledged protectorate, but that's another story.
Daniel, this trans-evolution, the coming age of human deconstruction, you're talking about cyborgs, artificial intelligence, bionic eyes, nanotechnology. First of all, what is nanotechnology and why did you write this book?
Well, the impetus to write this book came out of the information that I received back in 2005 from my sources at the Bilderberg Conference. And I think it would make a little bit of sense, you know, very, very quickly explain just in a few words what Bilderberg is and it is not. It's, you know, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories about Bilderberg, people calling it the Jewish Masonic conspiracy, you know, they're the most powerful organization in the world. They're not. You know, they're a conveyor belt, like, you know, Trilateral Commission on Council on Foreign Relations. It was a very important element of the oligarchical structures of the Cold War period back in the 50s and the 60s. And that in and of itself was a pretty significant factor because what it meant back then was that it was a vehicle through which private financier oligarchical interests were able to impose their policies on what is nominally sovereign governments. That said, in 2005, from my source of the Bilderberg meeting, I got what turned out to be a secret source document. It became to be known in 2007 as the Strategic Trends Report 2007-2036. It was basically a blueprint about how these people understood the future of humanity. And as I was reading this document, I suddenly realized that we're facing, you know, this greatest paradigm change in the history of mankind, that, you know, what we're looking at literally will forever change humanity. And they talked about, you know, the events that took place between 2007 and 2036, population, for example, going from 7 to 10 billion people. This report talked about lack of food, water, medicine, proper hygiene, you know, basic human necessities will spell collapse simply because of, you know, the collapse in globalized economy. Then they talked about, you know, the collapse of nation states or countries and then being replaced in turn by mega cities of a population base of over 20 million people. And then they said, as a result of population displacements, cities will swell to these unimaginable proportions, which will result from endemic lawlessness, high levels of violence, and then megacities themselves will fail by the year 2035. So when I was reading that, I said to myself, you know, they're talking about literally a blueprint for humanity. And then when it get, you know, when they got to technological aspects of the future, basically the point is that the generation of our children, you know, kids who are 15, 20 today, is the last truly human generation of people on the planet. Their children and their children's children will be transhuman, post-human, men-machines, cyborgs, beings who are not totally human. And because of, you know, this great technological advancement we're living through today, we're living, you know, we're seeing these changes all around us. And this is what this book is about, transhumanism, the coming age of human deconstruction, how the entire meaning and definition of what being human is all about will change from here on to the very near future.
On that point, Daniel, this is Augie speaking, what is human based on what you're saying?
You know, it's what is human is what we are, you know, what as human beings, how we understand humanity, this divine spark of reason that separates us from the animals, the ability to discover universal principles of nature that improve the lives of everybody on the planet per square kilometer of space against this nature. And the idea that they have, this whole movement, you know, transhumanist movement, which is one of the key elements of the book, is, again, the redefinition of what humanity will be like in the near future. Again, if you kind of look at technology, you know, over the last 100,000 years, we went from stone tools 100,000 BC, you know, to the wheel 4,000 BC, gunpowder in the 9th century, to the printing press in the 15th century. That was a big game changer, like Internet is today. Then we had the light bulb in the 19th century, and then, you know, 100 years ago, in the 20th century, we had, you know, cars, television set, 90 years ago, nuclear weapons, spacecraft, Internet. And now we have, you know, biotech, nanotech, fusion, fission, space travel. And what these people are talking about is that in the next 50 years, we will be able to create cybernetic individuals who will be completely indistinguishable from us humans. And again, you know, there's this, you know, answer or non-answer to your question. We don't know how they will define humanity from here on to the future, because again, we're extrapolating things. You know, with Bilderberg, it was easy. We knew that, you know, when you had a, you know, a coup d'etat on, you know, financial crisis, or, you know, something happened to a corporation, you know, these kinds of shenanigans. We knew someone was doing this to someone. We just didn't know who these someones were. And in my book, I put, you know, the names and the deeds and the documents and the photographs together and said, these are the people who are doing this at a certain, you know, mid-level. So that was easy. But with this book, Trans Evolution, you have, you know, when you finish reading the book, there are more questions than answers, because, again, we're projecting all this stuff into the future. Although there's a lot of information, and we see how technology is developing at a breathtaking rate, what we don't know is how quickly some of these, you know, convergence theories will take place. But what we do know is people like Ray Kurzweil, one of the greatest inventors of the 20th century and the man behind, you know, Google technology, they're talking about this whole transhumanist movement that by 2035, you know, they're convinced that we'll be able to transfer one's personality to an alternative carrier, which is an avatar. They're talking about the epoch of cybernetic immortality. And by 2045, they're talking about this new era dawns upon us, the era of neo-humanity, which, you know, literally will change our capacity to think, our capacity to reason. We'll be able to, you know, combine our knowledge with knowledge of others, what they call singularity, where they're talking about hive mind, you know, combining, you know, this collective intelligence of everyone on the planet into what they call hive mind. And we already have that today in the form of a cloud on your computer where you can upload your files onto this cloud, except that in the future, near future, less than one generation, this post-humanity, you know, as a result of transhumanist movement, will literally have, you know, erected these performance-enhancing bodies and brain augmentations to the point that, you know, they no longer could call themselves human as you and I understand being human today.
Daniel, you sound like that's a bad thing.
No, it's an amazing, you know, it's not a bad thing at all. Technology is an amazing thing. I mean, you know, on the one hand, you have a doctor, a surgeon operating, you know, in Philadelphia, sitting in his office on a little girl who is, you know, living in the Philippines, half the world away, who is dying of brain cancer, and he can operate on her. That's an amazing thing. But then on the other hand, you have using almost the same technology, a four-star general sitting in the Pentagon ordering a drone strike half the world away using almost the same kind of technologies. Technology is a necessary thing because, again, progress in development is directly proportional to population density. So for us, if we're 7 billion or 10 billion or whatever number of billion people we will have been in the future, we need technology in order to sustain life on the planet. But it's all about how this technology is being used. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that a lot of these technologies are not being developed, you know, to help humanity, not even being developed to stop the terrorists, but being developed to stop us, the people. A lot of the laws which are being written to justify these technologies, they're not written on a whim. They're specifically designed to give the government, you know, this carte blanche authority over the people during this chaos and confusion of this period that they call the age of transition. In other words, transition to a planetary civilization.
We're speaking with Daniel Estulin. His book is Transevolution, The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction. The website is danielestulin.com. That's Estulin, Daniel. And that will be on our podcast site, themorningedge.podomatic.com.
Daniel, basically it sounds to me like you're talking about not government, but you're talking about a corporatization of everything and a product result in the form of the transformation of what we call human. And this is the Brave New World in various other forms. So, you know,
you're absolutely right. I mean, what you just said is exactly dead on. You know, on the one hand, what's actually, you know, if you go back in history about 6,000 years and you look at who controlled knowledge, you know, the people who controlled knowledge were the high priests, and they kind of gave it to us one little droplet at a time. Well, today, because of this, you know, amazing, you know, technology and internet, suddenly, you know, this whole system, you know, has been turned on its head. Anybody, be it you, me, an Aborigine in the middle of Australia, you know, Koya Indian sitting in the middle of, you know, of a rainforest in Bolivia, you know, on a branch of a tree with computer and access to the internet, we have at our fingertips entire knowledge of human history. All we need to do is go to Google and type in anything we want, and you have it all there. So for the elite, in order to get, again, to gain the upper hand, and you're absolutely right, we're talking about corporations, One World Company Limited, as George Ball called it back in 1968, Bilderberg meeting in Canada. So on the one hand, what they're doing, the elite, is that, you know, the globalists, is they're destroying the world's economy on purpose, and we can see that all around us. Spain doesn't exist.
Well,
Portugal is a protectorate.
You know, on this point, Daniel, right now, currently, in the school systems we have, the ordinary classroom situation is like one-fourth of the kids that are so-called being educated have no access to any kind of computer whatsoever in this country, in this modern U.S. country. And so, effectively, by elimination or ignorance or divergence or distraction, we are allowing, as you said, an elite to be educated, and the rest go hang themselves.
Absolutely. That's the whole point. There are many ways to do this. Obviously, the easiest way is destruction of the world economy. That's why the terms such as deindustrialization, zero growth. In the United States, you know, you have Detroit, and that's a perfect example, you know, what once was the motor city for decades, and now it's just bombed out shell, post-apocalyptic, looks like Dresden did after World War II. And there is a reason for this madness, and people don't seem to realize it, that there's a reason why Detroit is being destroyed the way it is in front of everyone there to see. Because, again, on the one hand, the elite are destroying the economy on purpose and sending us to hell in a handbasket. But on the other hand, using gazillions of dollars that they have, because you need that much money, you know, to develop technology, super high-end technology, you know, they're getting ready to conquer space. That's why you have corporations such as, you know, Mars One from the Netherlands getting ready to send men's, you know, a mission to Mars by 2019. The Russians and the European Space Agency are also going to Mars in 2023. One-way trip, the people who are going there, they're not coming back. And the whole point is, you know, it's also, it's our calling. We need to do that as people. We need to conquer space because, as I said to Castro when I was with him, because when I asked him, he didn't know what to say, I said, how do you understand immortality? And he kind of, you know, talked about Marx and, you know, which had nothing to do with what I asked him. And so he said, well, how do you understand? And I said to him, you know, it's the whole point of that, you know, a million years from now, to have gazillions, billzillions people out there living in every nook and corner of the galaxy, because it's, you know, the necessity of our, you know, people to preserve the survival of our species. That's immortality. And for us to do that, we need to conquer space. We need to go to the moon. We need to go to Mars. We need to use the natural resources in the solar system, you know, to conquer the galaxies and give us the energy such as fission and fusion, which we have plenty of that on the moon in the form of helium-3.
Daniel.
So technology is an amazing thing.
Daniel, years ago I interviewed the late Leonard Schlein, who has written quite a bit about the development of the human culture, and one of the things that came up was when you look at the population curve of any species, you know, there's a slow growth, and then it starts to increase as the environment favors it, and it becomes dominant in the environment. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about humans or wolves or bacteria. And then all of a sudden the growth almost becomes parabolic upward, and then the population collapses. And he said that when you look at the human species and how its growth has come in the last couple hundred thousand years, then you hit the Industrial Revolution and it ramps up. And then in the last century or two centuries, you know, the growth has become parabolic. He says one of two things happens to a species. Either it collapses and it basically disappears or goes to extinction, or it takes an evolutionary jump. Maybe we're just at the beginning of the most important evolutionary jump for the human species.
You know, we're at the point, again, you know, when you talk about, for example, natural resource, the only really, truly renewable natural resource is the capacity of the human mind. So we want as many people as you can possibly have. And with the technology today, we can reach that. So the idea is that, you know, if you're going, you know, you're talking about the curve, Louis XI in France, going back to the 1460s, proved that through technology and development, you can increase your population density. Leibniz proved that 300 years ago. Progress in development is directly proportional to population density. The elite understand this very well, even if, you know, we the people don't. So for them, the Rockefellers, which is just a metaphor for powerful people, for these, you know, powerful people to live, most of us have to die, which is, again, one of the reasons they're deindustrializing the world, on the one hand, while on the other, using their money to increase technology for themselves, because, again, going back to the report, what the report, the Strategic Trends Report, talked about is that there is a growing gap between majority and a small number of highly visible super rich, and this is likely to pose an increasing threat to social order and stability. Mm-hmm. Then the report talks about, you know, this growing desperation on the part of humanity, which will result in civil war, intercommunal violence,
Daniel,
insurgency.
I think when you extrapolate the way you do, it does seem pretty damned inevitable. However, Great Britain right now, according to their own statistics, the average age of half the population is 85 years old, and they're talking about extending life because population decreases are happening all over Europe, Germany, France, Italy, so forth. They're losing population. The only way they can extend population is to bring in immigration. Or if you want to keep the Western model alive, you got to make it live longer. So they're projecting lifespans up to 120 years. That means people will continue working or contributing or whatever in that way and not look at expanding population itself. What about that?
You know, the transhumanists have a very different vision of that. You know, we understand, you know, longer lifespans and immortality, as we do in these films. What was the name of that film? Highlander, where for every 100 years you age just a little bit and you live thousands of years. But, you know, transhumanist movement understands it differently. They don't care, you know, how you look physically. They don't care if you're flesh and blood and bones. Their idea is literally, it's cybernetic immortality. They're talking about the idea of being able to download, literally download your mind onto a carrier such as internet, such as, you know, cyberspace, and live forever. So the idea of, you know, lifelong emotional well-being to the transhumanist is really not important. It's this, you know, elevated consciousness that they're after. And there's a great film coming out right now called Transcendence with Johnny Depp, who plays a role of this, you know, transhumanist scientist who is killed by a terrorist group, anti-technological terrorist group. But as he's dying, they upload his mind onto the computer, and then his mind tries to take over the entire world. So the point of the transhumanist movement itself is this ability, you know, to download consciousness onto a machine. And that's the idea that they have about post-humanity.
Where is that skill or that technology? How do they do that? And how far have they gotten with the ability to do something like that? How do we put Augie's brain on a computer?
Well, again, they're talking being able to do this by the year 2035, the first attempt to transfer one's personality to an alternative carrier will take place. There's a movement, transhumanist movement, called Russia 2045, and it includes some of the leading scientists and brain neurosurgeons, you know, transhumanists, and people like Ray Kurzweil and Nobel, you know, leading geneticists, and all these people belong to this movement, Russia 2045, and they're absolutely convinced that this is the period, the epoch of cybernetic immortality begins, where bodies literally made of nanorobots will be able to take shape or rise alongside hologram bodies. We don't know exactly if it's going to be in 2045, but they're convinced they'll be able to reach it.
Daniel, are they going to create models for people that need to be saved, so to speak, for the future with their minds and so forth? I mean, in the case of Dr. DeBakey down in Houston, he died, so to speak, in 91, or nearly died, and his wife was going to do the usual thing of donating his parts and so forth. But his students said, no, we can save him. We got to save him. We need him too much. And they did. He lived 6 years longer as a teacher. So here's an example of an early effort at a very isolated but prominent place in this country of a very prominent individual they tried to save with the technology they had, just in a very physical way. How does that tie into that?
You know, one of the key areas of this entire movement and the ability to extend life is understanding how brain system works, and that's neuroscience, is the study of the nervous system. Now, with advances in chemistry, computer science, engineering, medicine, and other disciplines, neuroscience now also includes the study of molecular, cellular, developmental, structural, functional, evolutionary, computational, and also medical aspects of the nervous system. So from molecular and cellular studies of individual nerve cells to imaging of sensory and motor tasks in the brain, neuroscience today has crossed the threshold of science and has become a key element of national security apparatus the world over. You know, so there's developmental on the one hand of these neural weapons, obviously, you know, for war purposes, but on the other, also you're talking about the developmental of, you know, emotional detection systems, you know, which will pervade public areas, you know, as global surveillance networks could seek out terrorists and criminals. So that's all related to the soldiers. But the other aspect of neuroscience is that they're convinced, again, that by the year 2045, you will be able to extend life tremendously, although nobody really knows just how much.
If the value of life means anything, and you're only focusing on the elite, and you have an infrastructure within every community, of every society, of every corporate government, if you will, that you need roads, you still need those functional aspects of water delivery and so on, is there going to be any attempt to treat the people who don't meet this elite status with the respect of, you have work to do, you have a life you can live, and you can extend your life accordingly?
And Daniel, let me just take a moment to remind people that we're talking with Daniel Estulin. He is the author of Trans Evolution, The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction. The website is danielestulin.com. That's Estulin. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of unnerving aspects to this entire science, you know, the future and transhumanist movement. You know, augmentations, for example, that could be a huge business for military, but also for the corporations. We have been integrating ourselves with technology for decades now, replacing damaged limbs with mechanical limbs. you know, implanting data chips into our bodies, which is coming, which give away huge amounts of information to governments and corporations all around the world. So as I come to the point when we will be actively encouraging to exchange our perfectly functional body parts for upgraded applications, well, I think if you have the media promoting it, and Hollywood promoting it, and social media promoting it, absolutely. I don't doubt it for a minute that maybe 5 years from now, you're going to have people walking down the street who will have replaced their perfectly normal functional limbs, you know, with blades like the Blade Runner Oscar Pistorius. It's going to be cool. It's going to be in vogue. It's going to be on television. It's going to be in films. Leading models are going to do it. But it comes at a price. People will have to take drugs for the rest of their lives to make sure the augmentations work. These drugs are dangerous and addictive and expensive. And if you don't take the drugs, our body will reject these augmentations. Now, the elite will have the technology, and they will have it in us. They will have the power of God to turn off our limbs, to turn off our eyes, to turn off our brain, to send messages to our brain, and control our thoughts, literally, as if they have the power of God. And these are the kinds of things, which is, again, unnerving things we're dealing with, because, again, the brain and everything that's being done with the brain is being integrated, you know, in many different facets of this technological augmentations. Intel, you know, a company, Intel, is working on sensors that will be implanted in the brain that will be able to directly control computers and cell phones. These technologies are being developed right now, and we're about 2 years away from integrating these technologies, you know, with the human beings. So instead of, you know, users opening documents and surfing the web, you know, we'll be able to do that using nothing more than our brain waves. The brain waves will be harnessed with Intel-developed sensors implanted in people's brains. And again, those who say it's not going to happen, it will happen.
Daniel,
it's just a matter of time.
Daniel, you're talking about this power that the elite would have over all the technology that's out there to turn things on and off, etc. But you talk about them as though they have a consensus on what they do. But the one thing that you don't seem to have addressed as far as an augmentation or replacement is the human nature of greed and the desire for power. How do they prevent each other in their struggles from using these people they control against each
competing.
Other?
I'm not sure I understood the question. How the elite will against the rest of us?
This super elite, you seem to say, operates with this group think that they're all working in the same goal to have this control. But once the individuals within those groups or constituencies within those groups have the control, why aren't they in conflict with the other constituencies of the super elite for total control?
Yeah, and, you know, it's not a conspiracy in a sense. Again, you know, one of the things I explained when I wrote the book on the Bilderberg Group is, you know, there's no conspiracy. There are no four old geezers sitting in an old room, you know, a dark room, holding hands, staring at a crystal ball, planning the world's domination. The world is a very complex place. But when you're talking about breakthroughs in science, you know, think, for example, you know, DNA. No, scientists have created a synthetic genome that can self-replicate. So they have taken a cell and modified the genes of a cell by inserting DNA from another organism, and the bacteria replicates itself, thus creating a second generation of a synthetic DNA. And so the organism will do exactly what the scientists intended it to do, a living thing under the control of man created in a laboratory. So you don't need to have this giant conspiracy. It's the fact is now you can create life in a laboratory. You can create beings which are not human, which have never existed on the planet Earth, simply because you can. And that's
Daniel, going back to Henry's point, what with all of that capacity, all that ability, with that skill, these new skills, these new technologies, and so on, what is to prevent competition from developing for monopoly, for power, and greed?
Oh, absolutely nothing. There will you will have competition, you know. But it's the old Fondi system where, you know, the companies come and go. Some disappear, like Lehman Brothers disappeared. But the system itself of control is self-perpetuating. You know, it's a system that literally is juggernaut that drives and forward, you know, has been doing it throughout centuries and will continue to do. It's them against the rest of humanity, which is, again, 99.9%.
She's right back into the conspiracy of the Bilderbergs and the Trilateral Commission and all those right-wing crazies who talk about this all the time.
Oh, they are crazies, and there's no conspiracy because, again, the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and Council of Relations, you know, they're not you know, decision makers at all. Real decision making process done at a much higher level. These are conveyor belts, organizations that have limited power, where basically they have these meetings and decide through consensus on the, you know, direction to take in their ongoing journey for control.
We've been speaking with Daniel Estulin. He is the author of Trans Evolution, The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction. The website is danielestulin.com. We'll link to that on the podcast site, themorningedge.podomatic.com. And Daniel, thank you for joining us on The Morning Edge.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I'm not sure... this seems pell-mell.
I told you he was going to be a mile a minute.
He really was, and I said pell-mell, didn't I? The point is that he goes into all the reasons why the technologies are possible and why it's going to happen in this endless extension.
I need some Google glasses.
What's that?
I need some Google glasses.
There you go. Yeah, with a little thing on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe I can just get them implanted.
Well, shortly you're going to be able to go to Britain and have things implanted in you to new organs,
yeah,
and so forth, because
be
the stem cell implants are going to come. That's the thing, Henry, you know. all this stuff is fine. Your mind gets placed in a new technology, a nanotechnology, and you're walking around, and your mind has never quite forgotten your teenage and your youth.
Well, I can fix that.
Well, right. I know they can. But what I'm saying is there is that physiological side that's going to come up post-21st century. But it is an irony, a set of ironies, that we have all these future things. And it's is it, like so many things, is it going to be limited to the elite? Or are they going to really educate the society? And where is the social benefit ever going to take place?
We have a bunch of coincidental things here. By the way, we're talking about, people bring that up a lot. It isn't just the right wing that does it. The left wing does it, too. The
sure.
Bilderbergs, mm-hmm. The trilaterals, New World Order. Some churches will be talking about the New World Order.
Oh, yeah.
And I just say, those groups don't run things. They're like filters. You know, you don't rise to the next level unless you pass through that filter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
you're not going to get into the Ritz-Carlton unless the doorman lets you into the first door.
I had the chance to talk to somebody who was in his 30s, but he was an executive for Bank of America, ran their Southeast Asia Global Bond Fund. I got to talk to him for about 45 minutes, and it was about 2006, as the economy, the real estate market here was going in, and he was telling, don't worry, you know, we have all this risk monetized and securitized. Even a 15% drop in prices wouldn't affect us. Well, that was all good, and I don't need to go into the conversation I had with him about where the market was and stuff, even if I had convinced him, there was no point for him. There was no benefit for him to go back to Bank of America and say this. He was doing just fine,
mm-hmm.
running Southeast Asia's global bond funds at 35 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, so what if the market, I'm sure he's doing just fine right now. I doubt he went unemployed.
Along that point, right now, there are some people calling that this is 1987 all over again, which people thought things were going to turn around with a minor dip, which a 10% dip is.
Well, I don't know. We talked about that two shows ago, right. And all we are bouncing off the support levels right now. This is a great time,
right.
But you know, as I said, you should cover both sides. You should hedge, mm-hmm. but it's nothing. I mean, what everybody's making.
We're going to have a letter from Henry to explain all this.
I don't know if that. I really want to take responsibility for people's investments, but what I was trying to get to, if I have it here, where is it? Oh, European Union's secret plan to have police remotely stop cars. Does this sound familiar? The EU is secretly developing a remote stopping device to be fitted to all cars that would allow police to disable vehicles at the flick of a switch from a control room.
They could shut them down.
Right. So why can't they shut people down, too, with their enhancement?
Oh, there you go.
Stop
them in their tracks.
Now, paying bills for the station, but also coincidentally.
It's thunder.
That was the Bilderberg Group. They're unhappy.
Yeah, that was it. That was the...
we've been asked to read this, but it coincidentally ties in with the guest.
Oh, okay.
Regardless of one's age, there is a living heritage, adventures, experiences, and memories to share. So be sure to show how much you care by remembering an elderly family member, friend, or neighbor, by a ride to a church, a trip shopping, or better yet, take the time to visit. Learn about life from the most experienced people in the world. That's the courtesy of Delaney, the families and staff at Langdon Hall at 1120 33rd Avenue West in Bradenton. Call 941-744-1923. That's 941-744-1923 for your area's residential care home of choice for all seniors. And now, this is not endorsed by Langdon Hall, but I think what better way to honor Grandma than to put her personality into a computer?
Well, then she lives forever.
Until she gets a virus.
Well,
coming up on the other...
Thunder.
Augie, I don't think you should touch that.
I guess not.
Your rheumatism is kicking up. On the other side of the break, we will pick up where we left off before we got on the trip to the future.
The threat of Obamacare driving people out of jobs.
Right. Or your calls, if you prefer, 941-745-1490.
This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato. 4450 South Tamiami Trail, Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals, with the animals,
having the right team on your side is important in every aspect of life. If you've been injured in an accident or as a result of medical malpractice, you need a team you can count on. At the law offices of Callens and Little, we go to bat against the insurance companies to make sure your rights are protected.
Insurance companies play hardball.
And so do we.
It's time to even the score.
Sharpen your edge. Call the Morning Edge with your comments at 941-745-1490. That's 941-745-1490. You can find your Morning Edge any time of the day on demand at themorningedge.podomatic.com. Turn out
the light. It's the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM. And, well, Augie, we had a lot of conversation about the Obamacare, not here on the show today, but through the media, that CBO report about the
loss of jobs.
Yes, except it really isn't loss of jobs. It's about people choosing not to work as much because they don't have to.
It's changing the ice cubes in your glass of water.
If you would like to move your microphone, I'll just turn it down. Now you can move it.
Okay, thank you.
How's that feel?
Yeah, that's better. It really is displacement, because if you've got two glasses of water and you move the ice cubes from one to the other, depending on the volume of the water, it's going to not change much at all. And that's kind of what's happened in this situation. But the other issue that I raised that I think is not being looked at is that as the insurance companies realize they don't need to have so many people creating barriers to people getting claims, They're gonna let people go.
I don't see that at all, Augie, because you have this idea that there's this big infrastructure within the insurance of the total pool. You said 3 million people. That's 1% of the U.S. population, including children. So
1% of the
you said would. There are 3 million jobs in the insurance industry.
That's the estimate that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I can't see how that would be 2% of the adult population.
You said 1% of the
we're over 300 million people in this country,
right?
And you're saying 3 million people's job is to prevent these claims from
being... Well, they have a pretty good bureaucracy of people that are...
Well, they're not all doing that.
No, but they're primarily as impediments to claim recovery.
No, that's not how it works.
All right. Yes,
there's a bunch of paper pushers and people that are doing different things in the insurance industry, and there's going to be more people doing that because what we have is a massive expansion of the insurance industry.
But the motivation is different now. The motivation is to get claims and get them resolved rather than eliminated or blocked.
Well, I disagree again because having had to fight insurance companies over this stuff, the new incentive, but I'm talking about the real new incentive.
Oh, the real new one. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Through Obamacare, the profits are capped for insurance companies.
Right.
And I believe it's 15% of the revenues generated.
As are salaries.
Right, but I mean the amount that's left over for shareholders can't exceed 15%. I believe that's the number, but it's
correct.
An arbitrary number.
That's right.
As opposed to where it was 20. Actually, the way they phrase it is 85% of the revenues must be spent on health care.
Right.
And in current cases, before Obamacare, it might only be 78%.
Mm-hmm.
Or even 75% would be having shareholders doing flips because that would be 25%. Going to the bottom line, towards the bottom line. Well, the only way to expand profits now is to expand the amount of health care you're providing.
The volume of people helped.
Right. So if you want $100 million to grow 10 million more, 10%, you have to spend 10% more on health care. You can't increase your profit by increasing profit margin.
Or you have to take care of more people.
Well, you have to spend the money.
And you have to spend it, right.
Right. You can't make greater profit now by increasing profit margin. Your profit margin is capped.
Right.
So the only way to expand profit is to expand the money you spend, which in turn means spending more by taking in more tax dollars or more premium dollars.
Or investing in technology. Spending of that sort is investing, you know.
No, that's not for health care. That's in administration.
Well, that's going to be a cute little card trick, I would say.
Yeah, that's exactly what it would be, a cute little shell game.
Right. So,
Three-card Monty. Is the one I think the game you're looking for.
That's the one. That's the game.
Well, Ed, we could be going into this. Jason Furman was filling in for Jay Carney at the White House press corps, and we really don't have time to go into this because there's one other story I just wanted to hit because it does tie in, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, and that is the announcement today of CVS that they're no longer going to be selling tobacco products.
CVS, not CBS.
CV is in Victor S, the pharmacy. It's Caremark Corporation.
Stop selling cigarettes.
7,600 stores will stop selling not just cigarettes, but all tobacco products by October.
I wonder if they're going to keep the vapor cigarettes.
I don't know. I would doubt it. Public health experts, actually, they want to refocus themselves as a health care provider.
Well, they are becoming health care models, and everybody wants to be a walk-in clinic in one way or another. If they're going to make real money, and they're claiming that they're going to lose $2 billion in the loss of sales of not selling cigarettes, that's their own shareholders. But they're going to try to make it up for the way they give care to people and so on. It's going to be interesting what happens with Walgreens and so on.
People would probably be surprised to know there really isn't that much profit margin on cigarettes for. They are a big draw to bring people in.
Well,
the money you make is on the marketing dollars you receive from the tobacco countries
but
to placement.
The statement they made was, we're going to lose $2 billion in sales.
Right.
Whatever else they're going to make, being aside.
Now, they're leaving a lot of money on the table for Walgreens either way.
Oh, they're going to be a big... It's going to be an interesting...
I can't see this being a big trend.
You don't?
Well, in the news this morning, they were talking about how it would spread to other places with pharmacies like Publix and Target
and Walgreens.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Walgreens would be the next one you look at. But these companies that sell more that mm-hmm. aren't so health-oriented, like a grocery store or a department store or like a Target, you know, I just don't see that happening. Besides, who's going to pay for health care if we don't tax cigarettes?
Well, it's just going to be 7-Elevens. You're going to have to go there. If they make the decision federally that says if you're going to provide health care stations for people to come, or well care stations, or whatever you want to call them, which is what CVS is claiming to be, a clinic, for lack of another word, cigarettes, the sale of something that's going to take health care down, is a natural thing to prohibit. I mean, it just becomes a, you know,
seems like if you're going to lose your Chantix prescription customers.
Well, then what's the one where you put the patch on? What's that one?
Patch.
Huh?
The patch.
No, I know it's a patch, but there's a brand for that. But you don't know the brand, yeah. Chantix, I found out, is pretty expensive.
Yes.
It's like $300 a month you got to kick out for those pills. And then they said it warns you with heart attack and every other consequence. But anyway,
coming up on Friday, we'll just have to surprise the audience. We've had a run of guests here. I think it's just us. Maybe we'll have a surprise on Friday, and hopefully I'll get to the Morning Joe Scarborough expose. Other than dead interns, the real scandal.
Well, this morning he wore pajamas to the studio, so.
Oh, wasn't that thrilling?
I know.
All right, we'll be back on Friday with another Morning Edge.